Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Loveline is meant for an adult audience. Loveline may contain sexually oriented content. Listener discretion is advised. Loveline with Dr. Chris starts.
3, 2, 1.
Now.
All right, y'all. Mercury is in retrograde and it is kicking my butt. So I've always struggled with whether or not I really support astrological things. I have somewhat of a buy-in, but let me tell you something. Today, in one day only, my laptop crashed. It's currently at the Mac hospital seeing if things can be recovered. And yes, it's a big deal. I don't even want to get into what's on there. Then I go to my clinical practice this morning and I lock myself out. And I have to sit there and wait for a locksmith to come and I have to cancel my entire morning. Thankfully, I brought my cell phone because had I not had my cell phone with me on the way to the bathroom, I do not know what I would have done. So there I am sitting on the stoop with my cell phone and the bathroom key like jerk. So Mercury in retrograde, I hope y'all are surviving. Hang in there. I was told it's only another week or two. Do we know? I can't. I feel like every time I turn around, it's happening and it's self-destructive. Question of the night. It's up on our Love on IG page. It's about how do you respond to food shaming? Because later in the show, we got Virgie Tovar always dropping body positive stuff on us. And of course, coming up next, we got Jake Shears. Lots to talk about. Me and him are both big readers, so I'm definitely interested to geek out on the kind of stuff we're reading. But before we get into that, T.I., God bless his daughter, the poor thing, her face, her stories, all over the internet. And I was sharing with you last week that she had liked a few tweets that were slamming her father. She's now unfollowed him on Instagram. Oh, yeah. That's the ouch that just echoes and echoes. He got the official unfollow. God bless. Poor thing. That's, I think, what I feel the worst about is everything but the fact that she's just being shamed all over. Piers Morgan, my buddy. God bless him. Always got something to say. He's one of the more trans antagonistic, homophobic people I've met. So he's basically upset. He's always upset about something, but he targets Sam Smith a lot. This time, it's because Sam, after, you know, coming out as non-binary, Piers is upset that he wore a suit. He says, I thought you were gender non-binary. Now you're back to being a man again. Ah, Piers, always showing us what a bigot sounds like. God bless you. God bless you. I was on his show a couple years ago. He wasn't as bad back then. Sticking with more homophobic news, because apparently that's what the theme of the opening segment is tonight. Tamar Braxton. I'm not 100% sure who that is. I know she's Toni Braxton's sister. I know she's famous for reality television. Right? No? Okay. No one cares. No one knows. But she posted a really problematic thing on her Instagram basically saying, and I quote, the truth is, ladies, that these dudes out here really be gay. They want D, period. If he lays with you for 3, 4, or 10 days and he don't touch you, it's not you. He wants a man. Oh, man. Homophobia all over the place. Look, I'll tell you. One of the number one things that comes into my clinical practice is people having low sexual desire. It doesn't mean you're gay. It might mean you're dating someone problematic like Tamar, you know, someone where you don't feel safe, someone that doesn't arouse you. But apparently now it's a gay thing if you're not having sex with your partner. So have you all seen the video that's gone viral? The bullied gay teen who stands up for himself? So much to talk about around this one. If you haven't seen it, I don't know if you really need to watch it. I don't like watching videos of people fighting, but bullied gay teen stands up for himself and becomes an internet hero. The tweet responses to this are wildly funny. His name is Jordan Steffi, and you can hear him demanding that the other kid not call him the F word, and the kid doesn't back down. Now, what initiated this fight, and again, it's more bullying, online bullying. Basically, he says that the kid he was fighting made an anti-gay post with a picture of him on it, heartbreaking, saying that he hates gays, threw a bunch of emojis all over it, and put it on his Snapchat. So the kid basically asks him to take it down, and the guy picks a fight, starts throwing on the F-bomb. And this poor kid, Steffi, says he's been bullied ever since he came out in seventh grade. So this is someone who's been dealing with violence for a long time. Finally stands up for himself. You know, violence should never be the first method of recourse, but I guess if you have a history of violence directed toward you and someone's in your face screaming at you and you ask them to stop and they don't, I actually get the fact that he felt he needed to physically take care of himself. I think what's most disappointing to me is that the way the school system and everyone has responded, instead of the school system stepping in and saying, look, this is unacceptable, we're going to start to put some programs in place, we're going to be talking to families, instead they just suspended both of them. And I think the problem with things like that is it's not a macro, long-term, sustainable solution. It's kind of putting Band-Aids on a larger systemic issue. Look, when you're in high school, that whole area, that whole social world is everything. And the toxicity or the health of it's really going to impact how safe you feel or don't feel. And the school systems aren't taking measures to protect people of any kind of minority status. We have more work to do. So suspending the two of them doesn't fix anything. But what does is, again, putting programs in place, letting teachers come out that might be gay or of other different gender sexual minorities to be role models, to normalize things. I'm always talking about the fact that we should be talking about really famous figures from history that are gay identified, just kind of discussing normalizing, because when we protect people from encountering different sexual, gender, or relational styles, they don't learn how to encounter it, they don't learn the language, and again, more importantly, they don't have confidence and they don't have it normalized. And that's kind of the goal that we should be working towards, right? Is everyone understanding how to kind of interface with diversity in our culture and our world, because whether or not you agree with it, that stuff is there. So the tweets back around this are hilarious, so y'all should definitely get online and check them out. But I don't know who's got my support, man. I can't imagine having someone in your face saying all that after having publicly shamed you. So I understand why he resorted to physicality, you know, and then the school just kind of throws him all to the side. So that's a rough one. Here's a quote from the school system. We don't like to get involved because kids need to learn how to handle these things themselves. Oh my God. Talk about not taking responsibility. Question of the night. Tonight's question is about food shaming. We'll be talking to Virgie Tovar about how we can take power over the plasticity of our brains, and we can actually start to change what we see as erotic and what we don't. The power of sexual plasticity. It's a beautiful thing. But coming up next, we got Jake Shears joining us, listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline. This is Loveline with Dr. Chris
on channel Q.
All right, we're back. We got our question of the night up on our Loveline G page. Tonight's question is about responses to being food shamed, because later in the show, we're going to be talking with Virgie Tovar, author of Right to Remain Fat. But more importantly, we got Jake Shears in the studio with
What's
us.
What's up?
What's going on?
You know, just back in LA for a second.
Yeah, I was asking you what it's like to be back, and you said you missed LA.
I've been living out of a suitcase, truthfully, for the last like year and a half. It's been a lot of being on the go.
And I know what's in your suitcase. It's a Switch, a bunch of books, and what was the other thing?
How do you know?
Because I did like a deep dive.
Really?
I did a deep dive. Yeah, if I'm going to interview someone, I'll go through their Instagram and try to see it as like a Rorschach and try to get a sense of them psychologically. And then I read all their interviews and try to like get a sense of like how they move through the world.
Okay, what was your conclusion?
Well, we'll get into all of the little pieces, because there's a couple things you said that I thought were really profound and surprising to hear. Maybe we'll just get into that. So let's go deep right away. And then we're going to geek out on books in a minute.
But, okay, awesome.
So looking at your social media and having been aware of you since you kind of came onto the scene, you've always been you've presented as very body positive, very confident. And so it's interesting to see in some of the interviews you talked about having struggled with body dysmorphia in your own body.
Yeah.
So talk to me about that journey.
In a big way. And it's something that I like still think about all the time. And, you know, I was super skinny when I was a teenager. I was just like I was a twig. And I always wanted to be bigger. And as it sort of I got older and sort of went into my 20s, and you know, I just started, I don't know, I was just kind of, we all are obsessed with our bodies, you know?
And especially in LA.
In LA. And as time went on, you know, I really, I just became like hyper focused on it. You know, I've really done bad things to my body because of it, you know? And it's like, it's something that I've really, it's crazy. I just turned 41, and you know, I'm like, I definitely have a little like, dad bod going on now, but I'm really trying to like learn to love it. But I definitely think about the times that I was so obsessed with my appearance and my body, and there was always kind of something else going on there with me. And I definitely it's something that I think as gay men we really struggle with, and especially now. I mean, it's just sort of I can't imagine being that 15-year-old me. In this moment in time, I think it's
in this current culture.
Yeah, I think it's got to be harder than ever.
I saw a stat, and listen to this one. It said that 1 in 3 people from the community have considered suicide for body image issues. 1 in 3.
Damn,
that's heartbreaking.
Yeah,
and you know your career is pretty visual.
Yeah.
And just, it's almost as though sometimes you said, how little clothing can I wear and still be wearing clothing?
Yeah.
And that's why it's interesting to hear that there was moments of struggle behind that.
Well, it gets hot on stage. That, you know what I mean? It gets
it's
hot.
It's a heat issue.
It gets hot on stage. But no, you're in front of people all the time and it's funny. It's like with Instagram too. It's like, I've really been conscious about over the past like couple years about how I present myself and, my body. And like, I don't know, I think about now how that makes people feel sometimes, and how that makes that 15-year-old kid feel if I'm, jacked up and, just...
I love that you're paying attention, because people in positions like yours, and tonight we're talking to Jake Shears about his career and the impact he's having culturally, it matters. People like you matter, because you're going to either normalize something in a positive way or you're going to start to dismantle that. So I love hearing that you're trying to just be yourself.
I don't want to pass those insecurities on to somebody else, you know, and that's just something I've really been conscious of, because I think it sort of can kind of bleed outward.
And also, newly single after 11 years. I mean, that's in 2015. But you kind of re-entered the world.
I did, yeah. Yeah, I had a partner of 11 years.
Well done. That's a long time.
Thanks.
A long time. Welcome to my clinical practice, where people get like 9 months, and I'm like, y'all are doing so good. 9 months.
Yeah, it's been 4 years since we parted ways. And then, I've got a sweetheart that's in New York, and it's really, I'm a really tough person to be with. I'm a really tough person to date.
Like, you said that in one of the interviews. I highlighted it. I'm not an easy person to be with at all. It has to be exhausting for the other person. I was like, wow, that's honest.
I mean, I'm anchorless.
Yeah.
You know, especially right now, like I've seriously been living out of a bag, and, I burst into tears at baggage claim yesterday, just because like it was just another, it's just like baggage claim after baggage claim after baggage claim. I just keep going from one place to the next, and it gets hard, and it's hard to like be with someone else when you can't be there necessarily.
It's such an interesting dichotomy, right? Because on one hand, it's such a sign of success that you're getting to travel and do so much. Would you be happy if you were more stabilized and more present and not working as much? Would that feel fulfilling to you?
Definitely more of a mix. Like I would really like a home. Like the only place I've got an apartment in New Orleans, and that's definitely my sanctuary. But, I would love to have a home and feel like I've got, somebody there, waiting for me.
Can't we move him? Let's get him on the phone.
No, I've been spending time in New York, okay. And I've really been doing my best, but it's there comes a point where you just have to like try to make it slow down a little bit.
Yeah. I don't know, it's hard because I'm like you in that I'm always career-wise trying to have a lot of balls in the air, and I had a breakdown once last year, and I said to my mom, it's that dichotomy of I know I'm doing all I'm supposed to do if I'm overwhelmed, but
yeah,
I would love some silence sometimes.
Totally. It's like Bowie said, you're in the right spot when you're kind of like walking out into the ocean and the floor suddenly kind of comes out from under your feet. He's like, that's where you always sort of want to be. But it's overwhelming.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a lot of times I feel like I bite off more than I can chew.
Yeah. But you're nailing it. And then talk to us about the whole memoir thing, because I'm a writer as well, but that's one of the few outlets through which I maybe really vulnerably give the world an insight into who I am. But like you do that musically, you do that visually, and then you think, let me add a memoir to that and just bring them in more.
It was super fun. I mean, okay. I've always loved writing, and that's like, I've dreamed of being a writer before a songwriter, and I've always wanted to write a book. So, going back, it was tough. It was really, really hard, but, I don't know. It was painful too. And fun, and it was like all those things. It's also weird kind of like letting out all this sort of private information, and I didn't realize how dirty it was. Like I seriously like did,
how
other
dirty
people
you
are, like,
are
God, it's so raunchy. Your book is so raunchy. You're such a and I don't know, I didn't really necessarily think of it that way, but
did you have that moment though where you hit send and you're like, oh my God, am I going to actually allow that to go to the editor, send, and you sent off like some kind of really vulnerable
story? I did
a
panic edit when it was just about to go to galleys. I did like a panic, just ran through the whole thing. It was just like, but yeah, it's weird to sort of, I don't know, let that all go. And And also, I end my book in 2006, so it was kind of cool to sort of put that as an ending point, and it's not like a memoir of my whole life or whatever, but I feel like I can kind of continue on when I want to.
What topically was the most difficult in your panic to allow to go through?
I definitely, like, there's a few scenes I toned down a little bit, where I just thought it was, like, maybe a little too explicit. I was like, "Mom's gonna read this,"
but and her friends.
The tough thing was writing about being a teenager.
Right? Why?
To me, that was kind of the most painful part of my life.
Okay.
And sort of re-experiencing that. It's funny. It's like you're writing all this stuff, and you don't realize the effect that it's having on you. Really, And then one day, one day you kind of fall apart and you realize that actually, it's tough writing about that stuff.
I can't imagine. I'm not ready for that. That's too real. No. Just clinical books. We're talking to Jake Shears. When we come back, we're going to be diving in deeper. You're listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline with Dr. Chris on channel Q.
All right, we're back. And tonight we're sitting down with Jake Shears.
What's up?
So hi. The song that we just came in with.
Yes.
That is one of those songs that, much like, do you remember D-Light's Groove is in the Heart?
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, of course. No, it's going to be on my tombstone, I think. Like,
yes!
I just know it. Like.
But those two songs are the only two songs I've ever heard where no matter where you are, no matter who we're talking about, it comes on and everyone starts doing a little shake and a shimmy.
It's so sweet. Always. I'm so happy. I feel like that song is going to live on.
It's a cultural moment.
It grew legs and just got a little life of its own.
Little did you know, you're sitting there in a coffee shop, you're like, this song's not going to be that big of a hit. And it's like,
yeah, you just never have any idea. Right? And the best thing is just to try to have fun when you're writing something and, make sure that you love it before you put it out. And, that's the bottom line.
Fingers crossed at that point, right? So something else I stumbled upon quickly that I want to ask you about is all the tracks were recorded in one take.
Yeah, the most recent album. Yeah, the only thing, like, we overdubbed horns and some strings, but like the body of all the songs on my last record are done in one go.
Whoa.
I was really proud of it. It's my dream record. Like, it was all recorded on tape.
God.
And it was quite it was an undertaking, and I've never been more proud of anything.
Like, congrats, man.
I've always wanted to have something with like fingerprints on it like that. And we worked really hard. It took a long time.
That's exciting. I'm proud of you. I love hearing people doing things like that where they're like, that is my work. I did it the way I wanted to. I'm proud of what I did.
Yeah, it was my dream. It was my dream to have a record like that. And I couldn't be prouder of it. I'm ready to, like, I've got new stuff coming out early this next year. So I'm like ready to do a left turn. It's completely different. And I'm super excited about that.
We're here for it. I have some viewer questions I'll ask you about later. Before we get there, though, me and you are both avid readers.
Yes.
You always have books with you. So I was asking you, what are you reading these days?
I'm a big horror fan.
Yes.
So I'm constantly looking for really good literary horror. And a lot of times it's really hard to find. But my favorites have been like Paul Tremblay, who just put out Growing Things, a collection of short stories that's amazing. I also just read this really cool book by Helen Phillips called The Need that was all about motherhood and...
In a horror framework? Or?
Yeah, it was okay. Weird. It was definitely spooky. It was a creepy book. I love... One of my favorites is this guy, Nick Cutter, who's put a few books out, and that's a pseudonym. I think he's a Canadian fiction writer. And, one of my favorite horror novels from, like, the last 5 years, I think, is this book called The Troop, which is about a bunch of Boy Scouts trapped on an island that get, like, infected by this parasite that, like, gestates in, like, 6 or 7 hours. And it's truly, truly horrific.
I'm writing all this down because I watch a lot of horror films. I tend to read like social justice, critical theory, queer theory stuff. But I stopped. Do you remember Dean Koontz?
Oh my God! Yeah, I grew up on all those
me
like
too.
Early Dean Koontz books and
all of them.
Watchers
so
and Midnight and
oh
Phantoms.
My God.
And, those are great books. I kind of like sort of I haven't read one in a while. But yeah, I was a big fan growing up, and Stephen King's my favorite writer of all time, I think.
Of course.
He's one of the greats. But right now, I'm reading this book by Marlon James that came out a few years ago called A Brief History of Seven Killings. That's this epic about the attempted assassination of Bob Marley
Wow.
In Jamaica, and it's just it's blowing my mind.
All right, I made a little list as you're saying all that. But we have a caller. Yeah. Hey, you're on with Jake Shears.
Hello?
Hey, you're on with Jake Shears.
Oh, hey, how's it going?
Hi. How's it going? Good.
Good. I've been a fan for a while of the show. Never had a reason to call in, but so I guess it's good and bad.
Well, thank you. Thank you. So what did you want to ask Jake?
Well, I actually had a personal question.
Uh-oh.
For me?
For both of you.
Okay.
What's the question?
Okay. I recently just got a new job, and it's like a dream job, but my girlfriend of a few years is, she was laid off, and so I'm really excited about this new job, but she's, you know, kind of in down the dumps about her situation, and she's trying to be excited for me, but I know that it's really difficult for her, so how do you, like, move past that in a relationship?
So, Dr. Shears... It's Loveline. People want advice. How do you help someone support someone else when your career's tanking but the others is succeeding?
God, it's really complicated. I mean, I think it's just best to be as supportive as possible, and really when your partner is feeling down or insecure, I mean, just to do your best to try to lift her up and you know, make sure she knows that you're proud of her and, you know, that you're in this together.
Yeah, because, I mean, do you ever have issues come up with you in your relationship where he's just like, dude? I mean, clearly foundationally. But, I mean, it's got to be hard to date someone that's a public figure, you know what I mean? And getting a lot of those, like, DMs.
It's not easy. It's something I have to be very, I personally have to be, and always learning to be just super conscious of. And that's, you know, that's sort of one of the main things about if I'm in a relationship with somebody that I have to think about. So I really identify with your question.
Yeah. Because I imagine it's got to be hard seeing you out there and getting all the responses you get. All right. Thanks for calling in, man.
Okay. Thank you so much.
So, and that's kind of what I identified with you most. And I read the quote about you're not an easy person to be with. I was like, oh, I so respect that, because I'm like really hard to date as well, mainly because the kind of work I do. I analyze the crap out of everything.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, I relate to that. It's not easy dating me. All right. We're going to take a little break. Coming up next, Jake Shears is going to stick around with us. He's also going to help me answer one of the DMs. But check out our IG Live, because we're going to be doing 60 Seconds. Listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline. This is Loveline with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we're back, and tonight we're with Jake Shears. So we've kind of been bouncing all over, but I love the whole book conversation, because it's rare that I can have a guest on where I'm like writing down a book list. So thank you for that.
Oh God, yeah, that's just the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah. So I was listening to your music. I mean, frequently your music is part of my world, but I was definitely like zeroing in. All For What, was I wrong to like feel Bowie vibes in that, or was that supposed to be?
I mean, he's my number one. So okay. So hopefully, but that song in particular, I actually was sort of my ode to, it was like my tribute to Beck.
Really?
It's very like, that's my sort of like tribute to like morning phase.
I was having a Bowie moment with you there, but all right.
And Sea Change, like cool. That vibe. Cool. But Beck's in my, like, also, like, yeah, I'm massive fans of both. So I should hope that they would influence my music, okay. Definitely.
Yeah, I mean, Beck is like the multi-talented. I mean, he does all of his own instruments and sings and writes. I mean,
he's the best. I dream about him. Like, and whenever I've ended up in the same room with him, I just like actually lose my shit.
Yeah. No, we're good. We're good. We got you. When you're around Beck, you fall apart.
I fall apart. Yeah, I lose it.
It's always interesting to hear what like celebrity makes another celebrity fall apart. And it's always someone, not that Beck is obscure, but he's obscure. A lot of people, I think, would expect you to say like Madonna, Beyonce. And it's like, no, Beck, because that man's a musician.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? And he's like never made a bad record.
And I remember the controversy when people were upset that he won Album of the Year way back in the day over Beyonce. And people were like, Beyonce had 80 writers, no shame in that. Beck wrote and played all the instruments, and they're like, he earned it.
Yeah, it's a good record, that one, you know.
But your album's awesome.
Thank you.
I mean, just FYI.
Thank you.
And there's a lot in there. And one of the things I also appreciate, and then we're going to answer a DM, is there's a lot of happiness in there.
Mm.
And I liked that.
I'm a very happy person. I've got my light and my dark side, but I'm definitely an optimistic, happy person in general. And I like to make happy music, or bittersweet.
Yeah, I felt it.
You know, I like to make music that makes people feel
good. With them porn star handlebars. You got a lot of like good hashtags in your music. Well done, sir. All right, time for some DMs.
Sliding into the DMs.
Sliding the DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms, because it's a big old sexy world and we want you to explore with confidence. All right, Dr. Chris and Dr. Jake Shears, are you ready, doctor?
Yeah.
Okay, absolutely. We've already gotten a little taste, but we're going to... So our fans don't always like to call in, so they do a lot of DMs. They slide in the DMs, drop their questions. It's what the kids do these days, you know what I mean? It's all tech. Hey, Dr. Chris, big fan of your show. Thank you. My question involves more of my insecurities and wanting to work through them. I've been seeing this guy for a few months, and he's trying to explore more kinky stuff. Some of it I'm not too comfortable with. I'm down to explore, but some of it's pretty intense. What advice would you give me? Partner's like, let's do the kink. And they're like, What do you do?
I think you got to communicate and talk about it and like make some kind of like happy medium. I think you're always going to have to... you know, to turn your partner on, do things, you know, that may not be in your wheelhouse. But if it feels too intense, then I think that's a thing, too. I think, I think you just got to talk about it and kind of like have it. I mean, what do you think?
I kind of agree with you. It really depends on your relational structure, right? If you're in a monogamous relationship, we're limited by our partner's limits. And so it's more important to really be willing to kind of try things.
Exactly. I'm just coming from that sort of headspace.
Yeah. And if you're in an open relationship, go find someone else. You know what I mean? Have you ever been in a relationship, though? I mean, again, looking at you globally, one would assume like Jake's in everything. I mean, do you tend to kind of bump into some...
Well, my partner of 11 years, it's like I love body suits. Like that's just like one of my like weird, you know.
What does that mean, body
like
suits?
Like a zip up, like full on, just
like rubber.
Not rubber, but like a kind of a latexy kind of just like being kind of like action figure-y, being like covered up. Not in my head or anything,
because that would be ridiculous.
That was always just been one of my turn-ons, and it was funny. It's like. You know, he wasn't particularly into it, but, every once in a while he'd let me drag it out from under the bed.
That's love, man. That's love. I love that for you. Sign the DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms, because it's a big old sexy world, and we want you to explore with confidence. Jake Shears, thank you so much tonight for swinging by and joining us.
Thank you for having me. I've had such a wonderful time.
Coming up next, we're going to be doing Body Positivity with Virgie Tovar. You're listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline. This is Loveline with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we're back and it's Tuesday night, so we got Virgie Tovar, author of Right to Remain Fat. How's it going?
Going well, thank you.
Yeah, so I was cruising around your IG. I do it often. And I saw like a heading of an article you wrote, and then I looked at the subheading. And I wanted to definitely ask you about it before we got into anything else. So the generalized heading was how to feel normal when the world sees you as too big. But then the subheading was how to help your brain normalize your body.
Yes. So, I mean, here's what's wild, right? Like our brain is this incredibly malleable, flexible muscle. And so you can recalibrate who you see as normal size within just a few hours or a few days. And researchers have shown this essentially that even in the period of, like a study period, so like a couple of hours where they're asking people to rate people and then they take a short break and then they rate them again, people who initially look at images of larger people, rated normal looking people, like the average size American, right? Like as more normal looking, they rated them as more normal looking than the people who had originally been shown images of smaller bodied people. And then they were rating normal sized people, average size Americans after, and they rated them larger. So even in just a few hours in a very small block of time, you can actually change how someone sees and how someone interprets someone else's body as normal or too large or too small. So it's really interesting, right? Because like the average U.S. woman, for instance, is a size 16 or above. Okay. So that's 67% of women.
67%, 16 or above. Okay, I had not heard that stat. That's powerful. So here's the question, Virgie. How do we do that on a mass scale to every single brain? Because we got a lot of work to do.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people don't realize this, or maybe they kind of intuitively understand it, but haven't sat with it. The body that we see 90% plus of the time in advertising and movies and TV shows is actually a minority body.
Right.
It is the body type of less than like 5% of the population, perhaps even closer to 1 or 2%. And as I mentioned, right, the majority, the average American is actually a plus size person. So, I mean, there are a few things we can do, right? Like we can change our feed to reflect people who actually are more in that normative range of, like, you know, plus size person, size 14, 16, something like that, if you're a woman. And then, of course, right, you can curate, especially with all of the media that we now have access to, you can really curate what kind of images you're seeing. And then also you can cull, like start to take out media images that kind of really do affirm that minority body, because we know that seeing that body over and over and over again actually creates a sense of body dissatisfaction in men and women.
Okay, so let me personally validate what you said in my own life experience, because I was just on tour doing like a lecture series. And one of the things I was talking about is what you just said, that like not only is our brain very plastic, but so is our sexuality. And I said to them on a very personal note that I'm socialized like everyone else was, and I was only eroticizing a small window of body types. But in challenging myself to watch different kinds of porn, and in challenging the media that I bathe and immerse my psyche into, that I have been able to extend that which I find sexually arousing and what I can romanticize. Like, I did the work and it paid off and it worked.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you think about it, when we're born into the planet, we do not experience attraction the way that we do as adults, right? Like, attraction is highly socially constructed. It is something we learn from our culture. Like, cultures in which larger people are considered normal and very attractive, the people there literally consider attraction to fat bodies as biological. And the same way that we as a culture believe that our attraction to thin bodies is biological, the truth is none of it's biological. It's all social education. And absolutely, because of that, there's this incredible elasticity. And I think for me, a great tip has been, you know, when you're like in the moment, self-stimulating, if you will, right as you're kind of at that point, you can actually kind of switch the image of whatever you're thinking to and kind of train your brain in that way. And I found that that's really effective too.
I love that. So tonight we're talking with Virgie Tovar, author of Right to Remain Fat, author and activist. And I love what you're saying, because it's funny. The more psychological research and study I do, the more sociological I become, because I agree with what you're saying. Our psychology is so socialized that it's all really sociology. And I like that idea. And that's why I'm always trying to share my own experience of that. So that's why, again, we can get back to exactly what you're saying, but that's why I always call out, like, if we're talking about eroticism, really pay attention to the kind of porn that you're engaging. We have feminist, body diverse porn. I mean, there's really a wealth of things that we can use to kind of shift, as you said, our brain and have it work for us. Because one of the questions that kind of comes up, and weigh in on this, your thoughts about this, where people will say, okay, so are you saying I should have sex with people I'm not attracted to? And I say no. I am saying, though, that there's a micro and a macro. The macro level is care enough to help dismantle these norms wherever you can, right? Knowing that it'll be better for the rest of us. It'll have a trickle-down effect. But, like, yeah, have sex to that which you're attracted to. But also, like you said, do some of the work and try to even shift the micro.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think when people think of attraction, they often think of it in a vacuum. But the truth is, right, like, we're getting constant affirmation and, you know, disincentives from the culture every single day. Like, every single time you're looking at an image on social media, on television, like when you're scrolling, when you're looking at ads, you're looking at magazines, right? All of these things are consistently confirming. And going back to what I was saying earlier, our brains are, they're incredibly elastic, right? They can expand, they can change what we think of as good looking, what we think, right? Like, and so this is where you start to see, like, the power of really choosing what media you're engaging with. And this is something I go on to say in the article. Make sure that your media percentage-wise is representative of the actual reality of the U.S., the actual reality of the people around you. Like, are you looking at media that has people of color, queer people, trans people, right, fat people? These are the people who are actually around you, not the hyper minority supermodels. And I think that at the end of the day, I agree, like, great, doing this work creates a better culture, but there's a huge payoff for us, because if we follow our attraction the way that we've been trained to, we essentially are trained to only ever look for social currency in our partner. We're taught to go after the person who's going to make us look the best to others. And that is not actually, it doesn't create great sexuality, it doesn't create good connections, and it creates a lot of relationship tension very quickly down the road.
Damn, Virgie Tovar is always dropping gems on us. Where can people find you?
I am on Instagram a lot, as you mentioned, at Virgie Tovar or VirgieTovar.com.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. Coming up next, we got Freak on the Street. You're listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and Radio.com.
Loveline. This is Loveline with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we're back. Mr. Shears has left the building. But it's time for some Freak on the Street, y'all. Which we got?
Yeah.
All right. What do we got? We got something. It's coming.
Do you think that I'm wrong because I stopped talking to this woman because she has a child?
Oh, wow. I haven't heard that in a while. Gosh, it's neither right or wrong. There's so many pieces to this. Couple things. Yes, dating someone who has a child is somewhat of a level of responsibility, right? You have to be understanding that they have another priority and you can't necessarily be centered, right? Because this child needs care and attention. Single parents, though, can be amazing partners, right? I don't want to say that because someone has a child that should be seen as baggage, because it's not. It's a beautiful added element that one's bringing into your life. I love kids. And a lot of people are like, what? And it's like, hear me out. Kids remind me of what true joy and like authenticity looks like. And there's something really beautiful about that. I also love the energy. So you have to just be willing to see the beauty that it can bring in. There's also downsides, but that's true for people's jobs or where they live. Like, there's always a cost benefit analysis, unfortunately, you have to do. But I also do respect if someone's saying, look, it's a responsibility that I don't know that I'm ready for, able to take on, for whatever the reasons are. I hope that you didn't like the person that much, because it would really be disappointing to hear that you really liked this person. You guys got along great. There's a lot of compatibility, but unfortunately the child was the deal breaker, because I think that there's ways that it doesn't need to be, right? I dated two people who had children, and we just had to be honest and talk about prioritization and boundaries and time together, right? I had to make sure that I had time one-on-one where we weren't disrupted by the kids. Also understood that there was time where the kids were going to be there, and I really found value and a lot of joy in that. And also I had to give a lot of flexibility, understanding that children are often quote-unquote spontaneous, and that I can't always hold my plus one to plans that are made, because sometimes children want their parent, or they're sad, or they're sick, or whatever it is. And so, yeah, you have to bring a level of flexibility. So I don't think it's bad, but just hear me say that if you really like this person, I do think it's something that you can fold in and find a way to make work. So, all right, coming up next, question of the night. Still some time, you can weigh in on that. Listen to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline. This is Loveline with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right. I'm sitting here still trying to catch my breath. My heart rate hasn't slowed down since Jake Shears has left the room. Man, that is one handsome man. Woo! I can still smell him on my shoulder when he hugged me. I'm doing little shoulder sniffs. I'm like, there he is. Oh, Jake. We got pics up, though, on our Loveline IG page. Mine as well. God. Oh, man. What's that? Yeah, I got to breathe. Woof. It's getting hot in this room. Still hot in this room. All right, y'all. Guess what? Question of the nighttime.
Question of the night.
All right. Tonight's question is, how do you respond to someone who food shames? This is a big deal. You know, we've talked about this a little bit before, that you want to set boundaries if you're working on having a healthy relationship with your body or food, with those that are around you and spend time with you. So I've talked about saying to your friends sometimes, let's not be that group of friends anymore that really shames certain foods or talks about the foods we're eating or not eating, because can pull us into that and get us trapped in that. And it can trigger things, right? Having a great day, your friends just start this up and we're all ruminating, and it can ruin a meal, it can ruin your mental health. So know that, you know, we can take the control back. All right. So what would you say, or how do you respond to food shaming? I already love these answers. Someone's first response was just a sad face. I feel you. Someone else's response was, I would say, bitch, did you pay for it? I didn't think so. Someone else said they would just keep on eating the bad food. Well, that's my life. I'm sitting there eating the Oreos. I'm like, go ahead, tell me about these. Shoving them in. Someone else said nothing. It's none of their business. Laugh out loud. Yeah. It's interesting how people think it's acceptable to weigh in on someone else's dietary choices. You know what I mean? And it's such a personal decision, but it's also so loaded. And that's kind of what I want to call out, is it's very loaded. You never know what someone's relationship is like with food and their diet and what they're struggling with or what they're trying to do. You don't know what their goals are, their struggles. So just be very thoughtful about that, especially the holiday time coming. But we'll talk more about that on Loveline, how to manage food boundaries with family members. Someone else said, I wouldn't care. It would taste so good. That's all that matters to me. That's me speaking as well. Someone else said, I would say I'm recovering from an eating disorder. Thanks. And there it is, right? You never know again what someone's struggling with and what you might be triggering. And for those that have an eating disorder, you know, you got to know the boundaries. Someone else's response to food shaming. I don't tell people not that to wear the bad shirt. So don't tell me what to eat. Yes, exactly. We don't talk about people's bad fashion. Don't talk about our dietary choices. Well said. Well said. That's right. Somebody else, double responder, said, tell them to not yuck on my yum. Well done. Well done. That applies to not just kinks, food as well. Don't yuck on my yum. I don't do this bad food BS. Eat what you want. Well done. Well done. Yeah. We're all fans of you. Someone else's response to food shaming. There's no such thing as bad food. And it's my body, my choice. It's true. There's no such thing as bad food. Different foods have different content of nutrients, but that doesn't make it bad. God, you know, somebody else said, I'd honestly feel bad. Internalized fat phobia is real. It's a lot to unpack and unlearn. It's true. Someone else said the thumbs up. That's all they got. Thumbs up emoji. All right. I see you. Tell them the F off? Question mark. Perhaps. Depends. Sometimes. Someone else said their response to food shaming. Tell them there's worse things I could do. Like be a Nazi. It's true. It's true. Yeah. Far worse. God. Someone else said, ignore them. Someone else said, basically just tell them to mind their own biz and eat a French fry and stop being miserable. That's right. I'm pretty frequently eating French fry. So it's very possible that I would be eating my French fry saying that to somebody. I was just in the movies over the weekend, Sunday, sitting in there eating French fries. Y'all, and you know, I didn't get them from the theater. I brought them from Veggie Grill. I was sitting there eating a stanky ass, smelly veggie burger from Veggie Grill and their French fries. God bless those around me, because that smells. Like, food like that stinks in a theater. Like, legit, right? But until movie theaters have vegan options, I'm going to have to be bringing my stuff in. I was so afraid they weren't going to let me come in with it. I rolled up the bag so it didn't necessarily look like the Veggie Grill handled bag. Had it under my arm, rolled up tight. What else am I going to eat? Twizzlers? Come on now. They don't even have Twizzlers. Okay. Back to the question tonight. How do you respond to food shaming? Tell them that their shaming behavior is toxic. Let me eat my cake. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Someone said I'd give them the finger because I probably like the food more than them. Y'all make me laugh. Somebody else said savor it more. Oh, that's a good one. Tell them F you and F the F off. Chew slower like a cow while telling them food has no morality. That's true too. Ask them if they want some. Hating because they're on a strict diet and secretly want so. Yeah, it's true. Secretly want some. Tell them it's rude for telling me what to eat. And someone else said, kindly tell them to F off. I eat what I want. Yep, strong feelings. But it's a personal thing. Y'all got my support on that one. Keeping it real. You know what I mean? It's a good one. Coming up next, we're going to be sliding into those DMs. Listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline. This is Loveline with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we're back. Time for some DMs.
Sliding into the DMs
is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms, because it's a big old sexy world and we want you to explore with confidence. Hey, Dr. Chris, I have a dating app, Burnout. Bam. Yet I haven't even been on the apps that much. I could not go on any dating apps for months and then decide to go back on. And within a few days, I'm anxious and depressed with checking it. I get depressed if I feel like I'm not getting enough messages or likes. But if I get a lot of messages and likes, I start feeling overwhelmed and super anxious. What do you think? Yeah, it's interesting. So dating app burnout, for those that are just joining us in general, it's when the apps are having a negative impact on you, and it can start to create that where you're not feeling desirable, you're starting to feel depressed, and it really has a mood decreaser where, you know, again, go on the apps when you're feeling good. That's kind of like the global assessment, right? If you're in a good mood, you can go on the apps. If you're feeling secure, you can go on the apps. If you're feeling depressed or lonely, don't. It's not going to make you feel any better. And in fact, it can make you feel worse because you're going to try to get it to meet a need it can't meet. It doesn't promise that you're going to get attention or have desirability reflected back. So just be thoughtful and also pay attention to how much time you're spending on it. You can really kind of get lost in a hole because, again, its goal is to possibly, over the course of some period of time, connect you with someone. It's not something that's supposed to always be feeding you attention and desirability. And some people put a lot of pressure on it and expectations. So check in on your mood before, check in on your mood while you're on it, and also check on your mood after. And sometimes you need to take a little break. So I appreciate you saying all that, that you get anxious and depressed. I also tell people to be thoughtful about how often they're doing it throughout the day. So just use it when you're feeling like you're in a better space, because you never know what kind of experiences you're going to have on it, right? There's a lot of like body shaming, sexual racism, all sorts of stuff you're going to encounter. So just check in on your mood, you know, and if you're feeling, again, in a stable, confident space, I'm feeling confident with it. Otherwise, using it against yourself. We have to be really thoughtful about how these things intersect and impact our mental health. Their purpose is just to possibly help you find a date, not to necessarily give you access socially. So go call a friend, you know, go eat a good meal, go for a walk, but get those needs met some other way. And for most of us, it's a good idea to take a couple of breaks or a couple of months off from it, you know, just kind of participate in the real world outside of that. So yeah, just check in on that. And as far as getting a lot of messages and getting overwhelmed, that can be another part of the burnout, is that there's too many options and too many possibilities, and we can't really build that much of a connection or intimacy with that many people. So you take three or four that you seem really interested in, exchange their numbers, really focus on them, take a break from the apps and give them a shot, right? Because we can spread ourselves too thin. So Slide the DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms. It's a big old sex world. We want you to explore with confidence. All our shows are podcasted. We are channelq.com. You can go back and binge. Jake Shears, our episode is going to be up tonight. You can share, you can post, you can re-listen. We'll be back tomorrow night. And as always, thank you for hanging out with me. And you have an awesome, awesome night.